Good day, ladies and gentlemen. This was supposed to be the part where I welcome you to, with all due respect, the podcast that features Alaska entertainment, politics, and life, and remind you to subscribe on Apple or Spotify so you don't miss an episode. But unfortunately, I am stuck in this elevator, so you'll have to go ahead without me.
Yo, in the life segment, we welcome our podcast travel guru, MC Scott McMurrin. Upgrade Alaska Airlines with miles, leg room, champagne, big smiles, hotel with beds, Avis car with wheels. My boy Scotty M got them deals.
In our life segment, Scott McMurrin is on hand to tell us the three things you need to know about travel in Alaska. Scott?
Dude, great to hear from you as always. Okay, let's get this stuff out of the way so I can talk about the Alaska Summer Showcase. Okay, so there's three things I want you to know about Alaska Airlines. First of all, they got what's called Access Alaska, which is a scheme where they shake you down for $60 a year at $5 a month and give you, quote unquote, early access to select sale fares, which they do periodically. And they also give you a Wi-Fi pass for that, which usually costs $8. So you get a one-way Wi-Fi pass every month that you pay them $5. And so that's what's going on there. I mean, I signed up for it because I have my own subscription service called Airfare 911, where I tell people kind of what the cool fares are first out of the gate. Second, renters, people who pay rent, now can earn frequent flyer mileage on Alaska Airlines with a program called BILT, B-I-L-T. It's called BILTrewards.com. Basically, you can pay your rent through the portal, P-O-R-T-A-L, and get frequent flyer miles, one mile for every dollar spent, with Alaska Airlines. That's a really, really good thing for people. They've got a bunch of other things that you can trade miles, trade points for, including Hyatt, United Airlines, and a bunch of others. The guy who told me about it really likes Turkish Airlines. Very, very, very cool program. Third thing, Alaska now mandates that you claim your bags at the end of the ticket that they issue. So if you're traveling on two tickets, like we're going to Africa, you know, so we're flying to Seattle on Alaska and then going to Africa on Qatar. We have to stop in Seattle, claim our bags, go to Qatar, check in, pay the fee, and go through TSA again. This is a mess. And it started March 1. It's already in effect. You have to do that. So you really, really, really need to pay attention to your layover time if you're checking bags, okay? Finally, come down to the Dena'ina Center on Saturday, March the 30th, and win $25,000 or your share of $25,000 in travel prizes at the Alaska Summer Showcase. We've got Alaska Airlines there, Alaska Dream Cruises, Aliesco will be there, all the cool people that you wanna meet and greet all summer long to do the cool things all day long, all summer long. It's the Alaska Summer Showcase. Don't miss it. How are we doing, Andrew?
All right. One final question.
Yeah.
Where is the hot spot that Alaskans should travel to this summer? Where's the place to go?
Well, I mean, I like that nonstop to JFK. Nonstop to JFK starts on June the 8th. Anchorage to JFK in New York starts June the 8th. That's an awesome trip, and I can't wait to get on that plane.
Excellent. Scott McMurrin, as always, thanks.
Okay, you listen to me. This is the part of the podcast where Andrew and Ethan talk about state and local politics. You got a problem with that? You got a problem with what they say? You come see me. Not Paulie, not Silvio, not some disgraced attorney general. You come see me. Capiche?
In our politics segment, the wheels are coming off and we have an inside look. First, breaking news today that the city of Anchorage, the municipality of Anchorage, is at risk of losing tens of millions in federal aid because they haven't completed their financial audits on time. Now, this coincides also with the same report today that the state of Alaska is at risk of losing tens of millions of dollars in education funding because the Alaska Department of Education did not file their paperwork on time. Now, although I can't speak to the state's issue, I do have my main man, former mayor of Anchorage, Ethan Berkowitz here. Ethan, what's the deal with the audits, brother?
Andrew, you know, I'm formophobic. I'm afraid of forms. I just don't like filling them out. They always make me nervous. But what we've got on here is you said that the municipality has not done its financials. People are probably thinking that's for 2023. It's for 2022. 2022, they're more than a year late getting those financials in. That's a big problem. It's a big problem in a larger sense because, number one, that's critical for our bond rating and our ability to secure bonds. The folks that lend money like to see what your financial conditions are. If you can't even show them your books, that's an issue. Labor contracts, you have to turn over the financials to the labor unions when you're negotiating those contracts so they can see what's going on. That's a really big problem. During my administration, when we had the SAP problem, we were 4 months late. We slipped one quarter in terms of getting these financials moving. It was a big deal. These guys are more than a year late. It is a significant problem. The state already has told them, for example, that compensation we get through the federal government for the ambulance services that the fire department provides, we're not going to get compensated. That's in the neighborhood of $20 million that we're on the edge of missing out on. There's some other things that are going to happen if we don't get this thing done by March 31st. And if we don't get it done by March 31st, there are going to be a bunch of April Fools here in this city.
Okay, so when you read the article in the Anchorage Daily News, there was two things that jumped out at me. First, the head auditor from an outside accounting agency said that although there was no money walking out the door, there were questions about how they were accounting for their money. And I will remind you, over the last 3 years, that's been one of the biggest concerns about the Bronson administration is not how much money they're spending, but how they are spending it. What are they accounting it to, right? I mean, this is a mayor who just spent $4 million illegally, basically leaving taxpayers with a dirt lot, right? So again, the question is, again, it's these internal controls. And one of the reasons why they've talked about the failure of the municipality to get these reports done is from turnover. And we know this. Nobody wants to work for Mayor Dave Bronson. So let me switch real quick. He's up for re-election. Let's talk about his campaign. And let's go behind the scenes because you and I both have contacts buried well within these campaigns, right? So tell me, what's going on behind the scenes of the Bronson administration?
Well, my brother, just got to correct one small thing. You attributed that story to the Daily News, lovely newspaper, best hometown newspaper we've got going. But it's actually public radio that broke the story. And so those guys.
Public radio. And I love public radio.
So why a contributor? I miss the mugs that they used to hand out, the ones that were all contoured. I wish they'd go back to that. It was a super, super gift that they had. What's going on behind the scenes here is nothing. I'm not seeing any evidence of a ground game from the Bronson campaign. People aren't knocking on doors. They're not handing out flyers. There's no mailers. There's none of that stuff that we see. There's none of that kind of outreach. You can speak to what it means when they say that they have money in the bank. They don't really have a great history of declaring their expenditures. So if I'm the Bronson campaign, I'm wondering where the campaign is because it is just not very visible.
Now, you remember 3 years ago, a lot of energy, a lot of motivation behind his first campaign, right? You had a different set of social circumstances and this huge angry movement, right? This whole Save Anchorage angry movement. They had a ground game. I've talked to people who have said, hey, by this time 3 years ago, I had two or three people at my door pitching Bronson. No ground game. Okay. Meanwhile, there's good interest in this race. I mean, ballots are coming in at a good pace. I think yesterday they had like 500 or 600 more ballots than they did the previous year. So you got some good interest in this race. You still have 4 or 5 days to go for people to drop off their ballots or go and vote in person. So not only does it, what I'm hearing is Team Bronson has no ground game compared to 2021, but there's little excitement in their camp. Now, remember, when you're running as an outsider, right, you have no access to City Hall resources. But from what I understand, Mayor Dave Bronson is basically putting his reelection campaign on the shoulders of three of his staffers, including his homeless coordinator. I mean, you know, he's not it's kind of like Dunleavy's reelection campaign where they're just using basically state or in this case, Bronson's using city employees to do his reelection campaign. They're at his fundraising events. They're at his campaign rallies. I mean, these are people who are serving dual purposes at the expense of taxpayers.
Look, you know, Dave Bronson's name recognition is probably pretty high. In fact, I know it's pretty high, but that's not a good thing for him. His, as I said on one of our earlier episodes, he is jealous of Joe Biden's numbers. He's got to be so far upside down, meaning his negatives are higher than his positives, that Joe Biden looks good to him. And that's a significant problem in this town. So I think that I've made fun of the fact that some of the campaigns are touting the fact that they would be competent, but that's in direct contrast to the Bronson administration's incompetence. And I think that extends to a campaign. Normally the adage is people campaign the way they're going to govern. Well, I think you've seen here that he is campaigning the way that he has governed, which doesn't reflect well on his campaign or his administration.
Well, and here's a stat that should blow anybody out of the water. Out of the 23 original executives that Mayor Dave Bronson appointed to his administration, out of 23, only 4 remain. And the fact is, when you look at a couple of the departures of his more high-profile, like executive appointments, like Shabaka, Kelly Shabaka's husband—I can't even remember his name now—he rolled a hand grenade into the room when he left. He said the Bronson administration was incompetent, corrupt, and basically violates the law. He lost his city manager, who then turned around and sued him for discrimination and bad conduct and, you know, all of these things. I mean, this is a guy who has scored more own goals than, I mean, you know, it really has been something. And this is the thing I want to talk to you about is the recent story promoted the fact that Bronson had so much cash on hand, right? Ooh, caught up with the fundraising. He has all this cash in the bank. But ladies and gentlemen, I want to remind you that just 3 years ago, Mayor Dave Bronson was fined like $80,000 in campaign violations, not for refusing or ignoring to report donors, but for refusing to list expenditures. Because when you list expenditures, you basically tip your card of hands to your opponent to show where you've spent your money and in what media you've bought. So that's why candidates like Bronson 3 years ago were really slow to report their expenses, because, you know, then you tip your hand. Then you say, okay, the guy spent $100,000 on KTUU or whatever. Right, Ethan?
That's the danger of declaring what your expenses are. Your opponents can pick apart what you're spending money on. They can see your tactics. They can see your strategy, and they can move accordingly. But you, in theory, have the same ability to see what they're doing as well. I mean, I also think that we're getting ready for a runoff, and I just want to quickly mention that I think pretty clearly the runoff's going to be between Bronson and LaFrance. Chris Tuck's campaign is never, you know, it's like one of those, I've watched loons try and take off. You know, they just spend a lot of time paddling on the water, and if they're lucky, they get airborne. Chris Tuck's campaign didn't get airborne. Bill Popp is, you know, he didn't start off with a constituency. I think if you try and use the business community in Anchorage as your base constituency, you're starting with a very narrow slice of this community, and it's just not big enough to propel you into a runoff. So it's going to be LaFrance and Bronson, and I think LaFrance's chances are much better.
All right, let's take a look at the latest polling. The latest polling I saw was 2 weeks ago. So first round, you've got Mayor Dave Bronson at 33%. You have Suzanne LaFrance at 28%. Bill Popp is up to 18%. And I got Chris Tuck at 10%. As you said, Chris Tuck's a campaign, you know, it debuted at 9%. It's topped out at 10%. It ain't going anywhere. I mean, it is a truck stuck in the mud, right? Bill Popp has come up lately in the polls. I think Bill Popp's problem, look, I'm going to tell you, Bill Popp, problem is the same as mine. He has no constituency, right? His constituency are those kind of moderate Republicans, business-minded, there's nowhere to grow for Bill Popp. And Suzanne LaFrance, I mean, she's got the most ceiling, right? Because people from Popp and Tuck are going to, after the first round, they're going to say, okay, where does my vote go? In a perfect world, in my perfect world, Ethan, that is probably not your perfect world or anybody else's perfect world, but in my perfect world, I would like to see a replication of what happened 9 years ago or 6 years ago. What is it? 9 years ago, sorry. I'm getting old, man. You'll have to forgive me. In 2015, right?
If Suzanne LaFrance... You still look great.
Oh, yeah. Sucking up. That's okay. all right. So look, I think if Suzanne LaFrance becomes the next mayor of the municipality of Anchorage, I think she needs to work closely with Bill Popp. She needs to bring Bill Popp into her administration. She needs to give him all kinds of powers as far as over the economic development and ACDA. I don't know how she does that. She can do that, create a more tighter liaison. That's the one thing that I wish with your administration was that I wish that I was closer connected, because I think there could have been more collaboration, right? But here's the problem. As soon as you hit the ground, your people were running, right? Your people were running. They were doing the housing at Paratrovich Place. We're at ACDA. We're still trying to figure out where our next thing is. Now I think they have developed relationships. I think you bring Bill Popp in. He already has a good reputation with the local business community and local business organizations. The dude spent the last 16, 17 years traveling this country, seeing what a city like Anchorage could look like. I think you've got Suzanne running the show. She's a good manager. She's she has a good judge of character. She's going to put good people around her, and I think she needs to wrap her arms around Bill Popp. Your thoughts on that?
You know, when I think of where they could put a Bill Popp, and you know, they have significantly more resources available to them today at the municipality than we did when we took over. It would have been a special projects, you know, just in charge of special projects, which means there's all kinds of development that can take place if you have a dedicated person who gets up every morning and says, "My job is to develop, you know, my pet project that I keep promoting is a waste to energy plant. You know, I'm going to round up the funds and the partnerships to make this happen. My job is to move Anchorage so we've got a more secure source of energy." Something like that. That's where you put a Bill Popp who's already knows the issues, has the contacts, can pick up the phone, do a Zoom or a Teams or whatever kind of preference you have.
Well, back in the day, Ethan, we used to call it a Rolodex.
Yeah, I was about to say Rolodex, but, you know, I don't even know. It's like the kids don't know what that is anymore. And that's where Bill Popp can make a huge difference and be a great asset.
I agree. All right, let's move on. A couple of more issues. Education. Look, I want to talk to you about this. Education funding appears stalled. Even Governor Dunleavy said, quote, "It's time to move on from education and talk about energy." Oh, my God. There you go. There's the education governor. Yeah, let's stop talking about education. We're done over there. All right, education funding. I want to throw this out. In Alaska, over the last 5 years, the state's correction budget has been up 40%, and that's mainly due to nobody wants to be a correction guards and you're paying overtime. All right, let me repeat that. The corrections budget is up over 40% over the last 5 years. Meanwhile, during that same time, education funding is down 2%. So, my friend, we are investing more in guarding our prisoners than educating our kids. I mean, come on, man. What are we doing here?
Sometimes that's the statistics speak for themselves. That is a clear indication of what the priorities are. And, you know, I wish I could say we were getting smarter on education, but clearly we're not. We're not making the investments we need to so that Alaska can be competitive in a increasingly global economy. We're not being smart about training the next generation so we can take care of ourselves, whether it's doctors and engineers, construction, none of that stuff. And so we're disabling ourselves. And what that ultimately does is lower the quality of life for Alaska, make it less attractive place for us to bring people in. And it also makes us vulnerable to the forces that make us a colony. You know, this is why we rail against the federal government, because we have to ask the federal government to do things, why we go begging and pleading for the oil industry to do more development or whatever the next industry is going to be, because we are not doing these things ourselves, and we're not doing these things ourselves because we aren't training our people to do it.
Well, and you look back over the last 5 years of the Donnelly administration, corrections began eclipsing the spend, the investment we make on the University of Alaska in 2022. I mean, we're spending more money on corrections than the state's contributing to the University of Alaska. And this is what kills me, again, before we move on. This is what kills me. Every study out there, including the RAND study and several other justice surveys, and studies show that for every $1 you invest in education, you're going to save $4 or $5 on corrections. And let me repeat that. Corrections budget's up 40% over the last 5 years. Education is down 2%.
Yeah, right? we have a pipeline. We're building a pipeline to prison instead of a pipeline to prosperity.
All right. One final thing, and this is a Hail Mary. This is probably
because
the
Easter's
longest
coming up. Is that why you're doing a Hail Mary?
That's right. I'm a holiday Catholic, Ethan. You know, I got to try and get my points where I can. All right.
For those little eggs.
That's right. All right. I want to talk about the longest of long shots, Proposition 8 on the municipal ballot, $5 million for 10 to 15 public restrooms. You know, it includes 20 years of maintenance. Look, it's going to cost you $5 a year if you live in a $500,000 house. It's $1 for $100,000 value. I know it's a long shot, but oh my God, this is so important, man. Please, people, just for Andrew Howcrow, just reach into your wallets and pull out $5. Let me tell you a story, okay? The majority of businesses downtown are mom and pops, and they are the ones suffering the consequences for years of not having any public bathrooms. Now, I'm not innocent in all of this, right? Of course, Ethan, as you know, ACDA ran the transit center. The transit center offered the only public bathroom downtown, but then when we closed the transit center, we obviously closed the bathroom. Now, the problem with the transit center bathroom was it was isolated. It was in the back of the hallway. I mean, I'm telling you, during my 6 years there, we had rapes and sexual assaults and overdoses and, you know, I don't know if our listeners have ever walked into their company bathroom at 8 a.m. and seen it completely torched just because somebody felt it was the thing to do, but I have. And, you know, $75,000 later, you know, there you go. So these bathrooms are incredibly important. And this is what I love about this proposition, Ethan. One of the first things I did at ACDA was we talked about the lack of public toilets downtown. I started to research this. And I came upon this amazing product that came out of Portland called the Portland Loo. As a matter of fact, at that time in 2015, it was the only patent that had ever come out of Portland. The Portland Loo, this toilet is amazing. It's heavy gauge steel. It's graffiti resistant. It's vandalism resistant. It has all kinds of vents and stuff so you can see what's going on. It is the only public toilet that's actually worked throughout the country, and it's built for inclement weather. The problem back in 2015, of course, was it was $175,000, and that didn't even cost shipping or plumbing. Now, you got this on the ballot. I know people are looking at this going, oh my God, you know, this is so bleeding heart liberal, but it's not. It's actually the most capitalistic proposition on the ballot, man. You're investing in downtown. You're investing in the economy. You're providing facilities for both the people experiencing homelessness and the million plus tourists that wander the streets of Anchorage. Ethan, your thoughts on this matter?
Andrew, my mind...
To pee or not to pee? That is the question, my friend. To pee or not to pee? Whether it is nobler in the minds to approve Proposition 8. Yada, yada, yada.
Hamlet and his soliloquy come in handy because I was racing with all kinds of puns. But I think your point is well taken, is that if we want to be an attractive tourist destination, we want to have an attractive community, then you got to provide facilities. Because let me let you in on a little secret. Everybody needs to go to the bathroom.
Yep. And when you got to go, you got to go, my brother.
They are not always easy to find. And given the folks that use downtown, particularly in the summertime, having a place is useful. We don't have as many trees as we used to in that part of the world.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks, Ethan. See you next time.
Well, it's almost to the end of the podcast, and I'm still stuck in this elevator listening to really bad music. It looks like I'll miss Andrew's closing comments, but at least you won't.
In closing comments, United States Senator Lisa Murkowski. This week, Murkowski was in the news when she lamented the Republican nominees for president, basically saying Donald Trump was a danger to democracy. Oh, man. And you know how your podcast host, Andrew, loves Lisa Murkowski. All right. And I take great steps to protect her. So sure enough, cue the MAGAs and the MAGETs, and the cries of traitor and rhino began bellowing from the darkest recesses of hell. So I took all of the criticism of U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, fed it into my own AI translator, and asked for a popular movie reference to explain what it all means. And this is what it gave me.
Let me tell you something about U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski. She eats breakfast 10 feet from 48 Republicans who are trained to kill her, so don't think for one second that you can make her nervous.
And that's the fact, Jack.